I'm Abigail.
And I'm Keith.
And this is the Global Treasures Podcast. We'll cover different World Heritage sites each episode.
These sites have been identified as having outstanding universal value
because they have cultural and/or natural significance that is so exceptional that it transcends national boundaries and is of importance to present and future generations.
There are 1,199 sites across the world, with more being added every year.
We'll spend each episode exploring the history, legends, travel tips, and so much more.
Welcome to Season 2, where we're going to explore the 45 sites that UNESCO added in 1979.
In this episode, Keith and I will be introducing you to Bryggen, Norway. Keith, can you get us started with a brief synopsis of what Bryggen is? I know you did a host of research on the history.
Yeah, so Bryggen is the old wharf of a town named Bryggen, Norway, located on the eastern side of the Vagen Harbor. It's actually one of North Europe's oldest port cities on the west coast of Norway, and was established as a center for trade by the 12th century. Bryggen now serves as a reminder of the town's importance in something called the Hanseatic League's trading empire. In 1350, a Hanseatic office was established in Bryggen, and eventually the Hanseatic League acquired ownership of Bryggen, controlling trade in things like stockfish from northern Norway, as well as others, through privileges granted by crowns. I'll probably talk a bit more about the Hanseatic League later, considering its importance to this site. So the Hanseatic League established a total of 4 overseas offices, and Bryggen is the only one that's preserved today. This area preserves its original compact medieval urban structure, with long rows of buildings facing the harbor, separated by narrow wooden passages.
How has Bryggen evolved over the years?
Bryggen has seen both periods of decline and reinvigoration. In the mid-1900s, the old merchant houses and storerooms stood abandoned and in really poor repair, with many fires destroying the characteristic wooden houses, the last major one being in 1955. However, the area found rejuvenation in the 1970s. And despite the fires throughout history, and there were a lot of them, rebuilding traditionally followed old patterns and methods, leaving the main structure preserved. Today, Bryggen's appearance mainly stems from the time after a large fire in 1702.
I think Bryggen looks like something out of a postcard, kind of like what you'd expect Norway to look like based on the Disney movie Frozen.
Absolutely. Bryggen is a picturesque village that looks like a painting due to its houses, then the boats, and also the mountains in the background. And then the closeness of each of the houses, they almost look like they're leaning on each other. It features rows of 2 to 3 story buildings, signified by the medieval name Gard, with gabled facades towards the harbor.
What's a gabled facade?
Yeah, so a gabled roof is a roof that has 2 sloping sides that meet at the top with a triangle shape. The facade is the front or back of the structure that forms the actual triangle. So these picturesque buildings lie on one or both sides of narrow passages that function as private courtyards. The houses are built in traditional timber log construction, with galleries featuring column and beam construction and horizontal wooden panel cladding. The roofs have original brick tiling or sheets, a result of fast repairs after an explosion during World War II. Towards the back, there are small fireproof warehouses or storerooms that were built of stone for the protection of special goods and valuables against fire.
So what are some of the more notable buildings and landmarks in Bryggen?
Okay, I knew you were going to ask that, and I'm going to butcher some of these names because they're all in Norwegian, but some of the more notable buildings you'll see in Bryggen include Bellgarden, which is actually 300 years old, as well as Svensgarden, and you'll know it when you see it has a carving of a king's head with 3 faces above the door. And yeah, here we go. And Horsengarden, with a carving of a unicorn above it, Bredsgarden, Bugarden, and Angledgarden. Yeah, and I probably messed every one of those up, but you get the idea. The oldest and tallest building in the area actually is St. Mary's Church, and important streets include Jakobsforden, and additional attractions in the area include the Fish Market and the Bergenhus Fortress. Visitors will probably enjoy the number of cafes, restaurants, and shops that sell traditional and unique crafts in the area.
So UNESCO clearly recognized its historical and cultural significance since it was declared a World Heritage Site. But what makes the history so unique?
So the city of Bergen, founded roughly in the year 1070, shortly after the Viking Age, was strategically established within the boundaries of a town called Teigsbergen. Situated in an easily defensible position, Bergen was accessible to ships from the far north, Iceland, and mainland Europe, thereby evolving into a significant Nordic trade hub. During the Middle Ages, the Bergen area encompassed all the buildings between the sea and Strædet Road, extending from one side on Holmen in the north to Vagsbunden in the south. In the early 14th century, Bergen witnessed the establishment of a cantor of the Hanseatic League in 1350, making it one of the four cantors alongside London, Brugge, and Novgorod. The Hanseatic League, an organization founded by the North German towns and German merchant communities abroad, aimed to protect their mutual trading interests. It was a completely self-administered entity, independent of the land in which they resided. The League dominated commercial activity in Northern Europe from the 13th to the 15th century, with origins traced to traders and trading towns in two main areas: the East, where German merchants monopolized the Baltic trade, and the West, where Rhineland merchants were active in the Low Countries and in England. The League's influence was largely controlled by central towns, most notably Lübeck, which had a central position and was dominated by great merchant families. The Hanseatic League secured royal rights, as I mentioned before, allowing them to be the exclusive trading group with some kingdoms in Northern Europe.
Interesting. So what was the experience like for people living there?
Interesting to say the least, and I'll cover some of the more notable tidbits a little bit later, but early Bergen would have been characterized by the sweet scent of tar in the buildings, and then an overwhelming odor of dried fish amongst all the red houses. Yeah, they were all red at one point. The Hanseatic merchants secured a monopoly on the export of dried and salted cod from the rich Norwegian coastline, trading it for things like grains, cereals, salt, and other luxury items. Over time, the wharfs were built up and improved, and the buildings gradually came under the control of the Hanseatic merchants. Although Bergen, the town, was never an official Hanseatic city, the Germans claimed the entire area of Bergen for themselves from the Norwegians, leading to the relocation of the old city center and the town hall. The Hanseatic merchants even took control of the old St. Mary's Church, and sermons were held in German until the 1900s.
So then I'm guessing the population grew from there.
Yeah, you guessed right. Over the next two centuries, the settlement grew larger, with approximately 2,000 Germans living and working in Bergen at its busiest. However, the Hanseatic office's operation at Bergen came to an end in 1754, when all the properties were transferred to Norwegian citizens. Just before that, in 1702, a significant fire damaged the buildings, leading to their reconstruction, and some eventually got demolished. Constant fires in history resulted in about a quarter of the buildings being built after 1702, while the rest are actually much younger. However, some of the stone cellars date all the way back to the 15th century.
What was the cause of all of these fires?
These buildings were traditionally made of wood and tar, and they probably heated with fires and things like fireplaces and ovens. So in addition, if you look at this neighborhood, the houses are incredibly close and give the impression, like I said, that they're kind of leaning on each other. I'm sure there are many reasons the fire started, but a stray spark or an ember could have started a conflagration that would engulf the neighborhood very quickly. In 1955, yet another devastating fire destroyed parts of the city, making possible a 13-year archaeological excavation. This excavation revealed the all-important Bergen inscriptions, comprising 670 medieval runic inscriptions on wooden bone, which were hailed as the most important runic find of the 20th century. Before this discovery, runes were actually believed to be used solely for things like inscriptions of names and maybe solemn phrases. However, these ones in Bergen showcased the everyday use of runes and presumably led to maybe that being the case in other parts of Scandinavia. The inscriptions range from property markers and short messages to business letters, orders, religious inscriptions in Latin, and even poetic charms meant as pieces of love magic. These invaluable artifacts are currently housed at the Bergen Museum, which I'm guessing you're going to talk about later, Abigail, which was built in 1976 on part of the site that was cleared by the fire.
What do some of these day-to-day inscriptions say?
Yeah, I actually laughed quite a bit when I was researching this because some of them are actually quite interesting and actually pretty lewd. Some have short messages of different types, such as like, "My darling, kiss me," which, and they're all numbered, and you can look these up. Others are more lively and could never be mentioned on a podcast that caters to all ages, so I won't. And even others are more day-to-day, like there's one that says, "Goya tells you to go home."
I guess that was their pre-technology social media.
Yeah, we've come full circle. My next Instagram post will be, "Goya tells you to go home on a stick." So a few more fun facts about Brigham that you can pay attention to when you go that'll make you smarter than your average tourist. So just behind Brigham, you can see, and I'm going to mess this name up, Steinkelleren, I think that's what it's called, which is actually Norway's oldest brothel. Also, because of Brigham's German past, you can still find a lot of names that are in German. Some of the most common family names you'll see there are Friel, Mowinkel, and Mon. There's also the story that says that walking through Brigham in the Hanseatic period was actually more dangerous than walking in Chicago, USA during the gangsters' time of the 1930s. At any one time, up to 1,000 teenagers and young people aged between 14 and 20 worked in the area, and I'm guessing they were kind of tough. There's also a wooden fish on Brigastredet, and it stands as a symbol of Bergen's reliance on the fishing industry for over 1,000 years. Finally, as mentioned before, all the buildings used to be German trading points and guest houses. Over the generations, they became Norwegian again. The last one to become Norwegian was a house that I mentioned earlier, known as the Unicorn Room. So we can see why this postcard image village is important. And I also know that it is a very popular tourist destination. So this is your area of expertise, Abigail. What's the best way to get there and see it for ourselves?
Sure. So the nearest airport is Bergen Airport, which is about a 20 to 30 minute ride away. You can take a bus, rideshare, or taxi. And the wharf is open daily, and it's free to see Bergen. There are plenty of walking tours available as well to book that are pretty inexpensive. Just make sure that you book in your native language, as the language spoken primarily is Norwegian.
All right, good stuff. But this is Northern Europe. I'm sure there are better times throughout the year to visit, with the winters being what they are there. But then again, perhaps the winter might be better to have less tourists around. What do you think?
Well, you said it. Tourism is a huge part of the economy in Bergen and Norway as a whole. And hotels are known to completely book up. It's also a huge cruise ship port of call, so I'd recommend booking your hotels and tours as soon as you have dates firmed up for your trip. You may want to avoid summer months, as families who use school breaks to vacation usually do go during this time, so January to March likely will have smaller crowds. That being said, in terms of weather, Norway is a chilly country. So it's typically in the 60s or 70s degree Fahrenheit during the summer. However, it gets very cold with quite a bit of precipitation between the months of August to December. It also tends to be very cloudy as well. So depending on the time of year you go, just make sure you have a jacket, boots, gloves, and other proper gear.
So while the UNESCO sites are amazing to see by themselves, outside of Brigham, what are the sites in the area do you recommend seeing? Is there anything else you could bundle a visit to the village with?
Outside of the houses, you mentioned the gorgeous St. Mary's Church before, which is worth a visit given how expansive the history is. Construction was started in the 1100s, so it's quite old. Brigham's Museum and the Hanseatic League Museum are two popular museums for visitors as well. The Brigham's Museum has artifacts showcasing what daily life was like during the medieval period. Fjord cruises are popular as well, especially for those amateur and professional photographers out there. And you can get around the city to all of these sites again easily by bus, boat, or rail, though traveling by foot is feasible in Bergen as well.
So like I mentioned before, this site must be a tourist haven, especially with the cruise ships. Roughly how many visitors does the village expect to receive in any given year?
I actually thought the number was going to be higher, but more than 500,000 annually, which is almost twice the number of actual residents of the city. Around 286,000 people call Bergen home.
Yep, that's a lot. Wow. All right, so when I was researching the history, I came across a lot of mentions of restaurants and cafes that dot the village and even the surrounding towns. What kind of food can we expect? Is it mainly seafood, I'm guessing?
The food in Norway is definitely unique. No chicken nuggets here. So Brunost is a soft brown cheese that looks like a block of fudge, and it has a very distinct sweet flavor. It's been consumed for thousands of years and is often eaten on waffles or sandwiches. It's consistently ranked as one of the top cheeses at the World Cheese Awards. Also, you should try just about any dish with salmon. Since Norway is one of the world's most prominent exporters, you'll find a variety of salmon dishes in the majority of restaurants. They pride themselves on not giving their salmon GMO feed or antibiotics.
Okay, hold up. There's a world cheese competition? Maybe that's our next trip. Anyway, okay, sorry. I'm assuming you could get some cod as well. When I was growing up, I loved breaded baked cod. So anyway, as I mentioned earlier, we know that this village with its iconic houses is burnt many times throughout history, including the most recent fire in 1955. So now, are there any issues or challenges faced with keeping Bryggen preserved at this point?
Bryggen is protected by the Norwegian Planning and Building Act, and most buildings are owned and cared for by the Bryggen Foundation, which was established in the 1960s. Something called the Bryggen Project was started in 2000 with the purpose of protecting and restoring Bryggen. They've completed projects such as installing a fire system with detection and extinguishing capabilities. Due to so much tourism, there's a lot of pressure to increase urban development, adding hotels, restaurants, etc. Unfortunately, that impacts the look and authentic feel of the site, as well as exposes Bryggen to environmental pollution, such as air pollution and emissions from cars, cruise ships, and heating, as well as litter. Tourism is a beautiful way to appreciate the world, but it does contribute to carbon emissions. That being said, there's a tight management plan here, so I'm truly confident that future generations will be able to continue to enjoy Bryggen in its full splendor. Thank you for listening to the Global Treasures podcast. If you would like to support the show, please subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please tell your friends about us. You can also check us out on YouTube and Facebook.
If you really want to support us, leave us a written review on either iTunes or Podbean. That'll let other people know that you appreciate this, and they might check it out as well. Okay, we're going to see you next time when we travel to one of the most iconic cathedrals in Europe, the 900-year-old Sartre's Cathedral in France. See you then.